You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
February the 17th, 2020, Attorney General William Barr now tapping a growing number of federal prosecutors across the nation to review high-profile Russian probes involving Trump associates and consider any allegations tied to Ukraine. And, of course, this comes as you've got numerous congressional Democrats and others calling for Barr to resign, claiming that he's gone too far and he should be removed. And, of course, more than 1,100 ex-employees of the Department of Justice signing a letter calling for Attorney General William Barr to resign, writing that his handling of the Roger Stone case, as he suggested the prison sentence recommended time of 9 years, was too much. These attorneys, ex-employees of the Department of Justice, say that that was openly and repeatedly flouting the principle of equal justice, and Barr should leave right away. I remind you again that despite all their noise about what Barr did or didn't do and whether or not Stone actually ends up having to serve the time as has been originally recommended by prosecutors or less, President Trump still has the authority to pardon him at any point anyway. But that's all right. Let him go ahead and bang on that drum for a while. Here's something we'll be looking forward to. The report that Michael Bloomberg is considering Hillary Clinton as a running mate. That's going to take more time than I have here in news and commentary. I'll deal with it right after we finish news and commentary. In the meantime, in California, Border Patrol agents find almost two dozen illegal immigrants inside a tractor trailer. The tractor trailer was going through a central checkpoint. The canine unit alerted something is strange in that vehicle. They opened it up, and here they found illegal immigrants. I'm telling you, if you don't continue to protect and secure our border, we're going to continue to have more and more illegals coming through. And they do not know yet, out of the ones they have, if they're one from Mexico or Central America, or two, if they have any diseases that are communicable, and or three, if they have been in the country before, deported, and are coming back again. In the meantime, in France, a polling firm has decided to issue a survey report that shows more than 6 in 10 French people think their civilization, as they know it, is going to collapse. That's because of all the immigrants crushing into France, some legal, some illegal. Some areas of Paris where they're considering no-go, where police won't go because of the immigrants are now controlling the streets. And yes, in many cases, it's Muslim. But now many of the French surveyed, 60%, believe our civilization is going to be destroyed as we know it. We should be taking a good look at what's happening in France and Europe and say, there, but by the grace of God, could go our country if we don't do something about it. Burkina Faso is a West African nation, very unstable. And the attacks on Christians are ramping up. 24 taken out of a church, including a pastor, taking out of a church and gunned down. Also in India, the number of violent attacks on Christians in India steadily increasing during the administration of a Hindu nationalist, Prime Minister Modi. And they say that this increase of tax on Christians is going to get worse as we go in the rest of the year. Jackson, Mississippi Dateline, and all along some sections of Mississippi near the Pearl River, they are bracing for high flooding. The Pearl River continuing to rise toward 38 feet. Many homes already lost. Folks trying to get out the best they can. And for some, it will come too late. There's a report that birds and animals are shrinking because of climate change. Birds are getting smaller, according to the World Economic Forum. Now, is it because they're actually seeing birds that are smaller, or are they looking at baby birds? You think they know that? I'm sure they know the difference. Surely they do. No, what they're saying is the birds are shrinking because, here it comes, climate change. Climate change is making the birds smaller. It could also be something called evolution. But no, climate change gets us more money, you know, and that's the way we raise money, with climate change. Not by hollering, evolution is coming, evolution is coming. World is ending. That's where we get our money.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
Wellington Environmental specializes in making your world safer, finding, removing threats to your health. In one facility, occupants were getting sick, but only in one portion of a building. And Wellington Environmental was asked to investigate and soon found air conditioning units in the rooms only in that side of the building were blowing cold air loaded with mold. The AC units in that part of the building were pulling air from a stagnant pond. Mystery solved, threat resolved. That's just one of many Wellington Environmental stories. And then there's a hospital that was going to have to close because of a water main break until Wellington stepped in to help. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality, lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Coming in to be close to your mind, kind of mind. So big and so strong.
USA. Larry Connors, USA.
So when this story surfaced the other day in the Drudge Report, I kind of just smiled because we'd kind of joked about this at one time. Michael Bloomberg, now in the race to be the president on the Democrat ticket. And he's coming in late. He hadn't bothered, of course, with the Iowa Chaos Caucus. The New Hampshire primary, hadn't really paid any attention to what he's going to do in Nevada coming up, and behind that, South Carolina. He's been looking forward to Super Tuesday, and he's been putting a lot of money into those states for Super Tuesday. And there is where he was going to make his stand and show how powerful he was. He's been running campaign ads all across the nation, not just in those states, but in primarily those states, and pushing, one, gun control, and two, pointing out that he can beat Trump. And three, even suggesting that Trump is afraid of him. Now, Trump did acknowledge the other day, I would rather face Bloomberg than Bernie Sanders, because Bernie Sanders actually has a lot of supporters behind him, and Bloomberg's just trying to buy his way in. And that phrase, buy his way in, has been echoed inside Democrat circles. They don't like it one bit. Biden is used against Bloomberg. Bernie has used it. Senator Sanders. Senator Warren as well. Klobuchar. They're all pointing out that Bloomberg hasn't been doing the work, the heavy lifting. They've been doing all of that. And now he kind of wants to come in and claim the prize by throwing cash down on the table. But what if that's not going to be enough? What if his money is not going to be able to sway everything? Unless he's going to go to every voting place and give, I don't know, what would it take? 1,000? maybe $100, maybe $10 every voter to get them to vote his way. And, of course, that's illegal. You and I know that. I'm not sure the Democrats know that, but it's illegal. Would that still work? And since they really can't do that, what are his other options? Bloomberg is another old white guy. I thought this was supposed to be the woke party. I thought this woke party was going to be all about inclusiveness and breaking down barriers. I mean, when we look at the candidates who were lined up to begin with, we had minority groups represented by color. We had various looks from age. And, of course, we had only two genders represented, so maybe that was going to upset the LGBTQ community, except that Buttigieg, while not claiming to be transgender, does have a gay marriage. But was that still going to be enough to pull votes to defeat Donald Trump? None of these candidates, not one of them, was pulling big crowds. Even when they all appeared at one event together, they had very few. Whereas Trump, folks would line up for hours before he would show up for his event, knowing they probably weren't going to get in, but they're going to try. And look at New Hampshire. They did not have to go through the winner of New Hampshire to go to the polls to vote for Donald Trump on the Republican ticket. He was going to win that. But they did, and the numbers were staggering. Same thing with Iowa, of course. Let's put that aside. Let's just focus on New Hampshire. But again, the numbers for Iowa, that has turned out same thing. But how do they translate that into a national numbers? Especially since the last time around, the Democrats, according to Hillary, lost because of that darn Electoral College, that darn thing written into our Constitution. Just junk it and just go with a popular vote. Well, right now, these folks can't win on popular vote either. So what can Bloomberg do? Let me see. I see you. I see you. I see you with their wings waving. I know. Just give me a minute. Where can he go to find? I see you. Just wait a minute. Where can Bloomberg, he's thinking that, come on out. All right, Hillary, come on out and join me on stage. Is that what they're going to do? Are we going to have a Bloomberg-Clinton ticket? Some say that would be a forced attack on Trump. And Bloomberg might even switch his residency out of New York so he could look for some additional votes. He might go to Colorado or Florida. Since the Electoral College makes it hard for the president and vice president to be elected from the same state, that's why he would do that. And since we still have that darn pesty Electoral College as provided by that stupid piece of paper they call the Constitution, maybe he would do that. Would that happen? And would it be effective? Well, the Democrats know right now they've got to be wondering, what can we do? What can we do? The Nevada Democrat caucus is underway. Early voting has already started. And the polls are suggesting in Nevada it's going to be a wide open race. Bernie is still the favorite to win. He had been trailing Joe Biden until recently. But this is a caucus that awards delegates proportionally with a 15% minimum threshold, similar to what we saw with the Iowa chaos, but better. They are going to do their caucus Saturday at noon. And how's it going to go down? Well, you know where we are in all this. The top three finishers in Nevada in the Feb 22nd caucus will position themselves to be ready for the South Carolina primary Feb the 29th. But again, Bloomberg is not on this ballot. And the concern is that Bernie Sanders is going to continue to move forward, which is going to make it harder for Bloomberg. But can Bernie really be elected, or is he basically going to destroy the party from inside? That brings us to another issue. A piece written in the USA Today by Maureen Grope. Why some Democrats are worried Bernie Sanders could be unstoppable for the 2020 nomination. Opening sentence, Bernie Sanders won New Hampshire's Democrat primary with just over one quarter of the vote. He has fewer delegates than Pete Buttigieg. So why are so many center-left Democrats worried that the self-described Democrat socialist is a favorite to win the nomination? Because right now there are too many candidates in the party's center lane dividing up the rest of the vote. In fact, a guy is quoted in there who worked on Barack Obama's 2008 campaign, Dan Pfeiffer. He said, every time a moderate alternative fades, another emerges. And in terms of delegate allocation, Bernie Sanders is in a very, very strong position. See, before the voting began in Iowa, Biden had the strongest potential ability to beat Sanders among African Americans, white moderates, and other voters. But Biden came in fourth in Iowa, fifth in New Hampshire. And now he's going into South Carolina at the end of this month, and it appears Bloomberg is now picking up some of the black vote. Now, you got Biden going around saying, you know, a lot of folks are taking the black vote for granted. They should not do that. And I think what he's trying to re-impress on everyone is, I'm here fighting for the black vote. They're just going to take you for granted, as if the Democrat Party has not done that forever. And that explains why so many black Americans are thinking Trump. They look at their economic situation now, and he made it clear what he got to lose by voting for me in the last time around, and he got 8% of the black vote. There is now talk that he could get double digits. Some dare say maybe up to 30% of the black vote. I don't see him getting 30%. But if he gets anything around 20%, that's going to be a formidable number for Democrats to overcome. Michael Bloomberg is not going to appeal to them, even though he has been going up in numbers when you compare him to Biden. And they're going to go back and replay the frisk law that he endorsed in New York City. And they'll be replaying some of his remarks where he said, you know, the one way to do it is you take them and you throw them up against the wall. And by them, he's talking about minorities, generally young blacks. The Democrat Party inside will be those candidates running against Bloomberg. They'll be pulling out those knives as often as necessary. Their goal is to be the one standing when all the others are blooded and left behind. As it was with Trump when he was running with all the Republican candidates on stage. You got to come out on top. You got to win the primary. If you don't win your primary, the rest of it means nothing. You can't do anything. Oh, you could try to step in as a third-party candidate at the last minute, but that's not going to happen. And look at the diversity we have going on right now inside the Democrat Party between two old white men. I'm taking take Biden out of the equation entirely. Look at Bernie Sanders and Michael Bloomberg. Old, white, rich. One all about capitalism, one is all about socialism. But he also likes capitalism that rewards him. That would be Bernie. Elizabeth Warren's already made it clear. We cannot continue to fight and destroy ourselves till there's not one of us left standing. And her campaign is gasping. I would say it will be called by the end of this month, that way of South Carolina. Her campaign will be dead in the water. Whether or not they decide to call it, we'll see. Buttigieg probably going to maintain. Klobuchar had been rising, getting more money. So I would think Warren and Sanders are thinking among the top guys running, the white guys, one of them may pick me to be vice president, so I kind of need to watch how I direct remarks right now. I might want to be on that ticket. Klobuchar indicated no way does she want to be on a ticket with Bernie Sanders. I haven't seen her address the position about being on with Bloomberg. And if Bloomberg is looking to add a woman, what woman would draw the most view, the most interest, the most high octane in the Democrat Party? Hillary? To that extent, that might be the play, which brings us full circle. If he puts Hillary on the ticket with him in a general election, or even lets it leak out before we wrap up the primary so he can cinch the primary for the Democrats, will that be effective for them? I don't think it will. I don't think there's a single candidate running now or anyone they can bring in that will turn this around for the Democrats, with the exception of maybe Michelle Obama. But she's not coming in either. Of course, Democrats really like to spend your money. I'll give you a perfect example of more Democrat waste when we continue.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton sponsors this segment. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. I'll see you at Red Fitness Lounge. Get details at redfitnesslounge.com. redfitnesslounge.com.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, bass.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
So we're talking a moment ago about Nevada primary coming up. And don't forget, Super Tuesday is March 3rd. We got Alabama, Arkansas, California, Colorado, Democrats abroad, Maine, Massachusetts, Minnesota, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Vermont, Virginia, all holding presidential primaries on that date. That's going to be a real test. And that's where we'll see if Bloomberg is really going to have what it takes to go to the next level. He's certainly spending the money to do it. And more importantly, do any of the other Democrats have the ability to go past that point? Or for that matter, reach it after we finish with Nevada this next Saturday, and then behind that, South Carolina. And of course, when it comes to those currently at the top of the Democrat Party, they want to go more socialist, more left. They think that's what you want. That's because they are in their own echo chambers, and they hear that coming back again. Which means this next story is going to mean nothing to them, but to you. Bulletin, bulletin, bulletin. The cost of building the California bullet train is going to cost more than originally thought. Yeah, right. Surprise, bulletin. It's going to jump in cost by more than $1 billion. $1 billion. This is that high-speed bullet train to be built between L.A. and San Francisco. I know you're anxious for it. You don't live in those areas, but boy, if they get it, I want to go ride that thing. I want to go from L.A. and San Francisco really, really fast and get on a plane. No, I want to do it on the rail. President Trump, of course, has been highly critical of it, claiming of the billions already wasted. It is one of the most expensive infrastructure projects in the U.S., but the California High Speed Authority now pegging the cost of completing the project at $80.3 billion. $1.3 billion. I should have added the 1.3, the .3. That sounds like change, doesn't it? $0.3 billion? $1.3 billion more than previously expected. No surprise. And they attribute the price hike to a delay in the completion of the project of the line between Silicon Valley and the Central Valley. Said it's going to take about 1.5 years extra time. And, of course, there's that little thing called inflation. And there's also more accurate estimations and the fact that our numbers were never good to begin with. So they have a deadline of 2022 to finish their tracks for the first section. They say that's on schedule. We don't know if we'll have the train, and it may only go zip. Oh, that can't go any farther because we don't have it finished. It's supposed to be 350 miles of electrified high-speed rail. They say in the next 18, 24 months, we will have it ready. Now is not the time to turn back, they're saying. In the meantime, speaking of the Silicon Valley, the co-founder of Oracle says this is going to become one of California's greatest embarrassments, as if they could find a greater embarrassment. He's saying while they're doing all that, in the near future, people will have autonomous electric cars going from L.A. to San Francisco at a fraction of the cost, letting them leave and go as they choose, not wait on the train. That's not what they wanted to hear. I want to take, in the next segment, time to honor those who survived Pearl Harbor Day, and we just lost another one of the survivors. That's coming up in the next segment. Please stand by.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDrurylaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
Love and happiness. Wait a minute, something's going wrong. Someone's on the phone. 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Talking about how she can make it right. Yeah.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
This is, of course, President's Day 2020. A federal holiday is celebrated on the third Monday in this month, and this time, this date, this Monday. Originally established in 1885 to recognize President George Washington, the holiday became popularly known simply as President's Day. After it was moved as part of 1971's Uniform Monday Holiday Act, an attempt to create more three-day weekends for the nation's workers. Several states still have individual holidays honoring the birthdays of Washington, Lincoln, and others, but President's Day is now considered a way to celebrate all U.S. presidents. And so we're here today. That's part of the history of this country. And maybe you had not really given it any thought as to how we reached having this day to be going from Washington's birthday to President's Day. But in the 60s, Congress proposed that measure, as I said, called the Uniform Monday Holiday Act. Now, Senator Robert McClory of Illinois was the one championing for that. And so now we have this date, the third Monday of this month, designated as President's Day. And it was just over this weekend that we lost someone who
had contributed to this nation in a different way than being a president. He and many others. I want to give credit to The Republic and author Sean McKinnon for what I'm going to read you. And also a piece of audio we're going to play in a moment that would be given credit to the Arizona, let me make sure I got the right title here, the Arizona Republic, about survivors of Pearl Harbor telling their stories. The Sean McKinnon article points out the story of a guy by the name of Donald Stratton and said through the soles of his shoes, Donald Stratton could feel the heat from the platform where he stood on the wounded USS Arizona. The battleship shuddered as another explosion, the most powerful yet, cracked its hull. Six men huddled on the port side fire control tower, burned badly, trapped as a ship sank in the shallow waters near Honolulu that day, December 7, 1941. Had it been only 14 minutes since Japanese bombers shattered the morning, 14 minutes since an air ambush brought war to Pearl Harbor. Stratton and others saw someone moving on a smaller ship that had been tethered to the Arizona. A sailor on that supply vessel was about to cut a line when he saw Stratton and the others at the tower. The sailor waved off another man on the deck and continued to keep the line ready and heaved it toward the Arizona so Stratton and the others could grab it, secure it to the tower, and then hand over hand, one at a time, make their way 70 feet of rope above a burning oil slick. Stratton later said that, "I didn't know if I could move it, could make it, but the guy was shouting at me, 'Come on, kid, you can do it.'" Stratton and his son, years later, learned that that sailor, Joe George, had defied orders to cut the line to the Arizona, had never been recognized for what he did. But if he had cut that line when ordered, those six men, including Joe Stratton, would not have made it, would not have survived. So 2 years ago, Stratton and a couple of others went to the White House after being invited. They made a plea to President Trump. And on December 7th of 2017, on board the USS Arizona Memorial in Pearl Harbor, the Navy awarded Joe George a posthumous Bronze Star for valor because he did not cut the line. He kept that line so Joe Stratton, Donald Stratton, I should say, and the others could make it to safety. Again, this is all part of an article written by Sean McKinnon in The Republic. And they also did a video montage of various survivors of Pearl Harbor. And I want you to listen to some of it. You can just, this is true, real radio, my friend. When people would huddle around their radios, leaning in intently, trying to hear and trying to see what was being described, and in many cases could visualize it. Now that we've seen, of course, the pictures of Pearl Harbor, we have a visual reference in our mind. But again, even if you are in a position to close your eyes and listen to these men, you're going to see the horror they faced. And again, this is part of the documentary put together by the Arizona Republic.
Another plane coming down, it was machine gunning everything. And I said, them bastards are here.
I seen the rising sun and I thought, well, this is... That's Japanese, man. They're bombing us.
Guns and bombs. Then the explosion.
We know we took two or three bombs just on the deck itself.
And that bomb blew me back inside of the back of the vessel. It put me out of the, for a minute or two, hit it from a battle station.
Started firing at them right away, and we had 50 rounds of ammunition behind every gun, and had to break some of the locks to get them. They always locked them up.
I had a bullet through the calf of my leg.
It had 13 minutes is all, and it just boomed.
The bomb hit right after the number two turret here.
When the big one went, it was all over.
They dropped a bomb, armor-piercing.
And it went right into 1 million pounds of ammunition that exploded.
The bow of the ship came up about 30 feet out of the water and settled straight back.
Blew the whole damn bow of the ship off.
And the fireball went about 500 or 600 feet in the air and just engulfed us up there.
The fire ball is what got everybody up.
No place to go. And we had no way to get down from the metal was so hot, but it was a good thing we had our shoes on.
We started to smell smoke. Somebody said, get the hell out of here.
It was over.
I thought, well, we got to do something about this. We can't sit here and wait the ship go down. We got to do something.
Started up the ladder, and somebody was in there blocking the way. I said, get the hell out of the way. He says, I can't. So I pushed him up through the hatch. And
the guy started running out on fire.
Running out on fire. Again, that's part of the documentary presented by the Arizona Republic. They get the credit. You can go to ArizonaRepublic.com and see and hear the whole thing. One of those featured, Donald Stratton. He graduated from high school in 1940. They said he was a star athlete, needed work, a lot of young men joining the military, rumors buzzing about maybe the U.S. might be dragged into the war. And Stratton thought, well, I can use $21 a month, so he joined the Navy. He said, my theory was either you had a nice place aboard a ship, were high and dry, or you didn't have anything. He said, in the Army, you were crawling around the mud and everything else. I didn't want to do that. And then he got his first look at the Arizona in dry dock maintenance. And later he's on it. He said they fired at one point all 12 guns to the port side of the ship one time, moved us sideways in the water 30 or 60 feet. It was thunderous. I can imagine it was. And so then Stratton was aboard the Arizona on that date. He says that he has been back to Pearl Harbor. He'd said in a previous interview that he would go back sometimes. He did in Pearl Harbor with his family in 1966. He got active in the survivors groups and worked with a historian to preserve their stories. He said he tried to let go of his anger toward the Japanese, but he could never forget what happened. He said sometimes Japanese pilots attended memorial ceremonies and some of the older survivors would shake their hands. Stratton said, I just can't do that. He said, listen, all those men down there on that ship, 1,000 of them, they wouldn't do it, and I don't think they'd want me to do it. We can't forget what happened there that day. We can't let it happen again. And again, he's talking about shaking hands with some of the Japanese pilots who were flying the mission, not just Japanese in general. These were those who actually were involved in the attack on Pearl Harbor. And again, he's quoted in that, in part by an article by Sean McKinnon of the Republic, Arizona Republic. He's also told his story many times over. He published a book titled All the Gallant Men, An American Sailor's First-Hand Account of Pearl Harbor. And after that, he said, I've told my stories. I'm done. He passed away this last weekend. Now, as survivors of the Arizona can choose to have their ashes interred in the sunken battleship Pearl Harbor, but he decided long ago he didn't want that. After a lifetime at sea, he wanted to return and stay at his home on the prairie, which he did. One of the last surviving members of Pearl Harbor, passing away at the age of 97. We'll take a break when we come back. President Trump at NASCAR. Please stand by.
You can follow Larry on Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Someday, when I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you and the way you look tonight.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Yes, your love. To all of the drivers, technicians, and pit crews here today, good luck, and may the best team win. God bless you. God bless our military. God bless our veterans. And God bless America. Have a great race. Thank you.
That was President Trump yesterday as they were going to try to have the Daytona 500. And then after that, he later gave the statement, gentlemen, start your engines. And of course, over recent years, it had been changed to driver since you had some females driving. This time you didn't. They're all men driving. And they did have a motorcade down pit road around the 2.5 mile racetrack with the Beast, the president's limousine, leading the way. The 40-car field, the pace car behind it. That was a first for a sitting president. But it remained, the limo remained inside the track below the apron, did not go up on the banking. But they couldn't carry off the race. Weather intervened. So, it is scheduled to start about 2 hours from now. About 2 hours. And Quentin, my board operator, has already said that he and his dad cannot wait to see it. You planned your Sunday for it, and you didn't get to do that, so now you get to do it today. Well, I haven't checked the radar lately. I hope they do get it off. By the way, President George W. Bush had been the first Grand Marshal for a Daytona 500. That's 2004. Dale Earnhardt won it that time. But this is the first time the president took a trip around the track in his armored limousine. And the first lady was there. Now, I do want to point out to you that President George H.W. Bush gave the command to start the engines in the 92 Pepsi 400 on July 4th, and President Ronald Reagan did it for the 84 Cracker 400 also on July 4th, which happened to be Richard Petty's 200th and final series win. And do you remember that after that, after the checkered flag, Reagan and Petty were eating Kentucky Fried Chicken together? But Donald Trump yesterday gave the command to start your engines, and everybody was excited. Air Force One came in near the track, of course, and the only coverage I saw from CNN and the mainstream leftist media was to point out that the picture that was posted of the Air Force One was actually not President Trump coming in or leaving, but from President George W. Bush in 2004. There'd been a mistake. Somehow or another got mixed up. And, of course, the picture was better in 2004 because the stands were filled with folks at that time. At the time Air Force One arrived this time around, it was not so full. The crowd was sparse, but thousands were coming, and they were going to be in there when the president made his remarks. But the mainstream media, the only thing it could do is find something negative. Well, as far as the crowd was concerned, to not be able to participate yesterday as they planned, and it probably affected a lot of vacation plans and other plans families had, and I don't know how many would be able to get back today or what they've done about tickets that now suddenly are available, but they were still going to be a great day. The weather rained it out. Which you want. You want safety for the drivers. But what this president did, as did both Bushes, as did Reagan, make a connection with Americans, one, who love cars, two, who love fast cars, three, love NASCAR, and four, that kind of stuff is the heart of America. And that's something the leftists will never understand. They look at Daytona 500 fans, as I'd mentioned in the previous hour as we opened today's program, as knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing, stooped-over Neanderthals. And a perfect example is that when Michael Bloomberg is telling everyone that anybody can be a farmer. It takes nothing to be a farmer. Their attitude, it probably takes nothing to be a car driver. You get the car and drive, big deal. This is not just a race. It's Americana. And I do have some Democrat friends that do understand that. They're not so far left as many members of that party seem to be swinging at this point. They may not be NASCAR fans, but they can appreciate it. And they can appreciate the people and their love. And they do recognize it is part of Americana. For the left, they see another danger to our environment, all those gas fumes. Yeah, that's their picture. Sad. Really sad. We'll do what we can to enlighten them and educate them. So, make sure you and your friends and even your enemies join us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Book it.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.